WITR 101.9 FM.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a 2-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Thank you, driver. So this is Brigantine, huh?
Dolores Fletcher?
Yes, I'm Dolores Fletcher.
My name is Jorgensen. Miss Peck sent me for you. May I take your bag?
Oh, yes. Thank you. I've never been to the ocean before. Then again, I've never been anywhere before. I grew up in Utica, New York.
Yes, Miss Dolores.
I'm very eager to learn all about Brigantine. What's it like here in Brigantine?
Brigantine Island was first settled by the Lenape Indians in the 16th century. They called it Watamunica and used it as a seasonal fishing spot. Then the Dutch explored it in 1608 while searching for a water route to the Orient. Before long, it was a popular stop among sailors, including the famous pirate Captain Kidd, who reputedly buried his treasure here in the 1680s.
A real pirate? No fooling?
No fooling, Miss Dolores.
How exciting! Has anyone ever found the treasure?
No, never. And the island has been settled by the English for over 200 years.
When did my family move here?
In the early 1700s. The Pecks were one of four families to purchase land here. Before long, they had started a shipbuilding firm and had a small whaling fleet. They also did a bit of privateering during the Revolutionary War.
Privateering? Isn't that sort of like piracy?
A bit, yes.
So we have pirates in our family tree. Can you tell me more about it, please?
Begging your pardon, Mr. Loris, but I should probably save some of the family history for your aunt to explain.
Oh, all right. I apologize for being so chatty. I'm just really excited is all.
No apologies necessary, Mr. Loris. We're approaching Peck House.
Wow. That's the biggest house I've ever seen.
Built in 1796 and still the finest home to be found on the New Jersey shore.
Thank you.
I'll take your bag inside and notify Miss Peck that you've arrived. In the meantime, I think you'll find the view quite pleasant.
So beautiful. Maybe I'm finally home. Hello?
Dolores! Why, I haven't seen you since you were a baby.
And now, look at you, the very image of your mother. Hello, Aunt Emmeline.
It's pronounced Emmeline, dear.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No need to apologize. How would you know? You've only seen my name written on a few letters, after all.
Thank you, Aunt Emmeline.
Oh, Dolores. I'm so pleased that you decided to come. Please, join me in the sitting room and tell me all about your trip. I do hope the bus wasn't too uncomfortable.
Oh, no, it was just fine.
Were you able to rest at all on the way down from Utica?
No, but only because I was looking forward to getting here and seeing you. I wanted to thank you for sending me a ticket and inviting me to visit.
Oh, you're quite welcome, child. This is your home, too. And I hope you'll stay with us for a good long while.
I would like that very much.
You must have thought it odd that I should write to you after so many years.
Oh, it's all right.
No, it's not. You're my niece, my sister's child, my only living blood relative. If I had been able to have my way, I would have snatched you up and brought you back here to live. But your father didn't approve of our family for some reason. After the death of your mother, he left with you and forbade me to have any contact with you. However, when I heard of his passing, it felt like the proper time to reach out to you, to let you know that you're not alone in the world.
Thank you, Aunt Emmeline. Mr. Jorgensen was telling me about the family history on the drive over here.
Really?
Yes. He explained all about how the Pecks came to live here.
Oh, gracious. You probably coaxed Jorgensen into talking more in 5 minutes than he does here in a week.
Oh, well, I didn't mean anything by it.
Of course you didn't. I'm only laughing because Jorgensen and I are so accustomed to one another's company that sometimes days pass without more than a dozen words being spoken. So, you see, it's good that you're here for more reasons than one. Having fresh blood will make all the difference.
Has Mr. Jorgensen been working for you for a long time, Aunt Emmeline?
All his life. His father was my parents' retainer. Jorgensen and I grew up together, and when he came of the proper age, he took over for his father. You certainly picked the right person to tell you about the lore of Brigantine. He's an amateur historian of no small renown.
Really? He was telling me how one of our ancestors was a pirate.
Privateer, dear. Privateer. There is a subtle difference. Though perhaps a bit too subtle for those who found themselves of the wrong end of a cutlass. That was Zacchaeus Peck. And if ever one was a ready-made swashbuckler, it was old Zacchaeus. Mean as a snake and far more dangerous. But a more successful privateer never sailed these waters. It's because of him that the Peck family fortune became the largest in all New Jersey. Of course, the locals swore that his uncanny ability to track down and capture British merchant vessels came from a deal he'd made with the pagan sea gods. But you can take that for what it's worth.
Sea gods?
No, silly superstitious nonsense, that's all. I'm sure Jorgensen knows all about that, but it'll have to wait until after supper.
Yes, Aunt Emmeline. And if there's time later, perhaps I could visit my mother's resting place?
All in good time. But first, let's eat. You must be famished after your long trip, and I'll tell you all about Brigantine Town. There are all sorts of things there to interest a young person.
I'd like that very much. Is there a boardwalk?
There certainly is. One of the best on the Jersey Shore. All sorts of amusements, rides, arcades, whatever strikes your fancy. If you like, Jorgensen can drive you down tomorrow after you've had a chance to rest.
Oh, that's all right, Aunt Emmeline. It's not a long walk to town, and I'd love the chance to go exploring.
As you wish, child. As you wish.
That's the Rocket Racer, the fastest coaster in Brigantine.
Coaster?
Yeah, you know, a roller coaster.
I know what a roller coaster is. I've just never seen one before.
Well, and the Rocket Racer is a great place to start. No, sure, it's nothing compared to the Comet over the Steel Pier, but for your first coaster ride, you can ask for better. You want a ticket?
Oh, I don't know.
Normally a nickel, but seeing how it's your first time, it's on the house.
Thank you. But maybe I should start with something smaller and work my way up.
Okay. How about the Tilt-A-Whirl? It's the one over there. You get on the crazy motion, but stay on the ground, just in case you're, you know, afraid of heights.
I think I could do that.
Oh.
But it's not right now, though. I'm new to Brigantine, and I'm just looking around town.
Well, I think you'll find there's not a whole lot to do once you get out of the boardwalk. But suit yourself. If you want, I can give you a guided tour of all the rides and arcades. Maybe tomorrow after dinner?
Why, I'd like that. I'm Dolores. Dolores Fletcher.
Joey DiBiase. Pleased to meet you, Dolores. Are you on vacation with your parents?
No. My parents, they're deceased.
Oh, yeah. Mine too.
Really?
Yeah. Grew up a lot of the state.
I'm sorry, Joey.
Those are the breaks. But I'm on my own now. Working here to save up money for trade school.
Is it a nice job?
well, I get lots of sun and fresh air. And I got me to meet you, so yeah. It's not so bad.
Thank you, Joey. I'm here to visit my aunt. She lives in that, big house at the north end of the island.
That house? Whoa! For real?
Uh-huh.
Whoa! Guess she isn't counting the green stamps to get a new waffle line, huh?
I guess not. I only just met her yesterday. She seems really nice.
I'm glad you two hit it off. Doesn't always work that way with family, you know.
Oh, believe me. I know. Well, I should get going.
But I'll see you tomorrow, right?
Yes. What time?
Oh, how about 7 o'clock? Just meet me right here.
It's a date.
Woo!
I mean...
I'll see you then, Dolores. And have fun exploring.
Oh, I will. Until tomorrow, Joey. Didn't know this earlier. They could have lilacs, set apart from all the other shrubbery. Oh, it smells heavenly. I'll have to remember to ask Aunt Emmeline about it.
How was your day, dear? Did you get to see lots of sights?
Oh, I did. I walked all over the island, went into town. I love it here so much. I feel like I never want to leave. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it.
No need to apologize, Dolores. I'm so glad you feel that way. This is your home and always will be. Did you go to the boardwalk?
Yes.
I thought you might like that. Did you try out any of the rides?
No, not today. There was just too much to see. But I did meet a young man who offered to show me around tomorrow evening. I mean, if you think that's okay.
Dolores, I'm not your guardian. I'm just your Auntie M. You're 18 now, a grown woman, and I know life hasn't been easy for you. So go out and have fun while you can.
Thank you, Auntie M. Oh, I meant to ask you. On my way back to the house, I saw a thicket of lilac, very fragrant, but it struck me as strange because there was nothing else growing around it, like within 100 feet or more.
Well, there's an old wives' tale that says lilacs grow in places either currently inhabited or inhabited in the past. Whereabouts was it?
A bit to the south, close to the beach, just before it all changes to sand.
Tell you what, after supper, why don't we take a walk and you can show it to me.
All right, Aunt Emmeline. There it is, just up ahead.
Interesting.
I didn't notice it before, but it almost looks like there's stone under the lilac, the foundation of a building.
Yes.
But what was it?
Dolores, what did your father tell you about your mother and the short time you lived here?
Nothing, really. When I was a little girl, I would ask about her sometimes. But then even I could tell just speaking of her would be more than he could bear. So I gave up trying.
Dear, this is what remains of the house you were born in.
What?
It was a little used guest cottage on our property, and your parents moved into it when they found out your mother was expecting. She died here very suddenly, and your father took you away, back to his family in upstate New York, immediately after. But first, he burned it to the ground. For what reason? I can only guess. No one's been here since.
Aunt Emmeline, I'm so sorry. If I hadn't brought you here, you wouldn't be upset right now.
No, it's all right. You have every right to know. In fact, you need to know so you'll understand everything.
All right. What was my mother like?
I'll tell you all about her in time. But for now, it's getting late. We should head back to the house. You want to be fresh for your date tomorrow, don't you?
Yes, Aunt Emmeline.
7 o'clock on the dot.
So, where'd you like to go first? Maybe the Penny Arcade or the Ferris Wheel?
Joey, I really need to talk to someone, and you're the only other person I know other than my aunt. Please?
Sure thing, Dolores. What's on your mind?
Yesterday, on my way back to my aunt's house, I ran across a thicket of lilacs. And well, it turns out that there are the remains of a cottage under it. The same cottage I was born in, and the same one my mother died in.
Oh, that's pretty spooky. Did you get a chance to check it out at all?
No. My aunt told me she'd answer any questions I'd have, but she's been ducking my questions all day.
Well, it's gotta be a touchy subject for her. They were sisters, right?
I know, but it seems as if she's hiding something. What? I don't know. But I think the answers are there in the remains of that cottage.
Okay. How can I help?
Will you go back to it with me?
Sure. Well, I don't start work till 2 tomorrow, so...
No, I meant tonight. Like, right now.
Oh. I don't know. It's getting dark.
We could take a flashlight. Please?
All right. I think there's one in the ticket booth. It works. Okay, we'll do this. Then come back and have some fun afterwards. Deal?
Deal. Thank you, Joey. I didn't want to go back there alone. I know we're close. I can smell the lilacs, even over the ocean breeze. Over there!
So what are we looking for?
I don't know exactly, but maybe there's like a cellar or something underneath the brush, something that survived the fire?
I think I see something. Here, can you hold a flashlight? Point it over here, will you?
A door! There's a cellar door!
Scorched and weathered, but still in one piece. Maybe we'll find something here after all, huh? It smells like sorry.
The stairs look like they're in one piece. I'm lighter. I'll go down first.
Can you see anything?
Not yet.
Are you okay?
The floor, it's covered with...
Jesus! There's skeletons everywhere. Tiny skeletons like...
Like skeletons of...
Let's get out of here.
Wait, over there. By the stone slab.
Dolores, we need to get out of here.
It's the corpse of a woman. Her skull split down the middle. It's my mother.
How can you know that?
I just know.
We're leaving. Now.
Joey!
I'm sorry, dear. But he couldn't be permitted to leave. And neither can you.
Jorgensen?
You asked me what really happened to your mother. Well, now it's time for you to know.
You killed her?
Me? Goodness gracious, no. It was your father who did that.
No.
Yes. Because he found out the truth.
What truth?
about our family. Remember when I told you about the old local superstition, Zacchaeus Peck, making a deal with pagan sea gods? They were right. He did make a deal. One that every generation has had to hold to ever since.
No. There's no such thing as sea gods.
Yeah. You'll learn otherwise. Very soon. The bargain was this. They made us richer than Croesus. In exchange, the firstborn of every generation must be sacrificed.
The tiny skeletons?
That was to have been your fate. But your father found out, rescued you.
And when my mother tried to stop him?
He took an axe to her. That same one that Jorgensen here just used on that young man of yours.
You're gonna kill me now, aren't you? To fulfill the Peck family part of the bargain?
No.
But why not? I mean, now that I know, you can't let me leave.
No, we can't. But your leaving was never part of the plan in any event.
Well, then what?
Other than you, I'm the last of the Pecks. And I'm incapable of bearing children. Which means I need you to carry on the bloodline and the bargain.
You don't mean...
You will bear children. The first to be sacrificed. The others to carry the Peck name. You will do so for as long as you're able. Jorgensen, take her to the house. I'm so glad you love it here, dear. Because this will be your home for the rest of your life.
So ends Lilacs by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Janet Vaughn was Dolores Fletcher. Marilyn Gigliotti was Emmeline Peck. Darren Jacobs was Joey DiBiase, and Talon Beeson was Jorgensen. I'm Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the time is June 25th, 1962. The place, a lonely beach. The story, Saucer of Loneliness by Theodore Sturgeon.
My name is Jason Bernayades. I'm a newspaper reporter, 31 years old. I write poetry, but I don't show it to anybody because they might laugh. And the things I write about are very important to me. I was an only child. I never went with girls much because I'm too ugly and too sensitive. And they used to hurt me. I live alone. It isn't much fun. I'm not painting this picture of myself to get sympathy. I don't need it. But it's important that you should know the kind of person I am. Otherwise, you won't understand what I'm going to tell you. It happened tonight, the thing I'm going to tell you about. Tonight, the 25th of June, 1962. I was down on the beach.
Hey! Mister! Hey, mister!
What is it, kid?
You seen a cop around any place?
On this beach?
I found this pile of clothes down near the rocks. A lady's dressing in shoes.
Well, did you see anybody? A girl?
Well, I think so, but she was running along the sand in the moonlight. I yelled to her, but she just kept running, and then I found these.
Look, kid, you go try to find a cop someplace. I'll see if I can find the girl.
Okay.
I thought to myself, she's dead. I'll never find her now in this white flood of moonlight with the surf seething in over the pale sand. I ran and ran until my knees buckled and went down in the swirl of it, the sea on my lips, with the taste of tears, and the whole white night shouted and wept. And then I saw her, waist deep, walking into the surf.
Stop. Stop it. Come back. Come on, come out.
Let go. Let me go.
Don't do it. Please don't.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
I'm going to have to hit you. Forgive me.
I hit her in the neck with the edge of my hand, and she slumped. I brought her ashore and carried her to where a dune was between us and the water. Then I rubbed her wrists. She had a pale, beautiful face with ancient, bottomless blue eyes. She opened them and looked at me after a moment. It's all right. Here, put my coat over you.
Why couldn't you leave me alone?
I couldn't.
Why?
Because it's important to me.
I suppose you want to know why I did it.
If I told you I understand, would you believe me?
How could you understand?
Maybe I know what it means to be lonely.
That.
That's it, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm so terribly tired.
Put your head against my arm and just stay. Don't be afraid. I've been looking for you for a long time.
Looking for me?
All my life.
How did you know? don't believe you.
It's true. I found your message.
Oh?
So you see, there's nothing to be afraid of. Not anymore. Just rest. The moonlight is terribly white.
Yes. I'd like to rest for a while.
She didn't remember it, of course. But I was one of the reporters who had covered the story when it first happened, 5 years ago. I'll never forget that day. I was working the police blotter. It was a quiet summer afternoon when they brought her in. Two big cops in blue uniforms.
Come on now, girlie, come on.
Let me go. I haven't done anything.
Take it easy now.
What's the trouble, Connolly?
Disturbing the peace, Sergeant.
Is this that Central Park call?
Hey, this is it.
I thought you radioed that there was a near riot up there.
Oh, you should have seen the place.
All right, give me the report.
Well, me and Bennett got up there, and there was a mob of people all surrounding this girl, see? So we bushed through, and there in the middle of maybe 600 people, she's lying there, sort of in a faint. I asked a couple of people what the difficulty was, and they tell me it's the flying saucer.
The what?
The flying saucer.
What flying saucer?
Let me finish, Sergeant. What flying saucer, I ask. And then they says that this girl was standing on the green, and suddenly the saucer comes down and starts whirring over her head like a halo.
What is this, miss? A gag?
It happened.
It did, eh? Well, now suppose you tell me your version.
I was standing in the park, and I looked up, and there it was.
Describe it.
It was beautiful. It was golden with a dusty finish, like an unripe Concord grape. It made a faint sound, a chord of two tones, and it circled over my head like some great round hummingbird.
Go on.
Well, other people must have seen it because they were all looking at me and pointing. I saw one man cross himself. And then it came down and touched me and spoke to me.
This flying saucer spoke to you?
Yes.
And just what did it say to you? I said, what did it say?
I can't tell you.
A secret, huh?
Yes.
I see. Connolly, this girl is for Bellevue.
Well, Sergeant, the plain fact is that it happened just like that. And 10 witnesses all agree it did.
Are you trying to tell me that there was such a thing as this whirring hummingbird of a saucer?
Oh, there was that, Sergeant.
And just how do you know, Connolly?
Well, we've got the thing out in the squad car.
You what?
Bennett's bringing it in right now, see? About 36 inches across it is, and covered with strange markings.
Great, Mother, did you call the bomb squad?
I didn't think of it.
Well, think of it, man. This may be some kind of atomic weapon.
I'll turn it over to ballistics.
Never mind about ballistics. Call the FBI and tell them we've got this thing.
Yes, sir. What about the girl?
We'll book her on disturbing the peace. I've got a feeling the government men may want a word with her.
Sergeant.
What is it, Benitez?
I'd like to do a story on this for my paper. Could I have a look at the saucer?
We'd better clear it first.
Well, could I talk to the girl?
After she's been booked.
Connolly, is the crowd still up at the park?
Very likely.
Well, I'll run up there and get some eyewitnesses. Then I'd like to come back and talk to the girl. Up at the park, they were still buzzing about it. Some said she was a communist agitator. Some said it was a flying saucer from Mars and she had stepped out of it. Others said she was a saint and it was her halo. I took some notes, phoned the paper, and went back downtown to talk to her. But there were a couple of agents with her, and they wouldn't let me in.
Now then, miss, you told the sergeant this saucer spoke to you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did it speak to you in English?
I don't know.
You did understand it, though?
Yes.
Do you speak any other languages?
No.
Tell me, what message did you receive from this instrument?
Wasn't anything, really.
Suppose you tell me.
I'd rather not.
Miss, let me be very frank. I'm not a policeman. I'm a security agent. That means that I deal with problems that affect the security of our country. Do you understand?
Yes.
Now, we've examined this flying saucer enough to know that it is not of American manufacture. It also possesses an extremely high radioactive count. Now, that means that it was made in an area where radioactive materials are in great abundance, such as an area where atom bombs are made. That's why we want to know the message you received from the saucer.
There was no message.
You just made it up.
Yes.
I'm afraid you're lying. Suppose we have some soldiers bring the saucer in here and hold it over your head. Would you object?
I don't care what you do.
All right, boys, bring it in. Now, when I tell the men to hold it over your head, you try to recall what it said.
I don't know what it said.
Lift it up, boys. Hold it right over her head.
All right.
It's talking to you now, isn't it?
Yes.
What is it saying? What did it say? All right, boys, crate it up and send it down to the National Research Laboratories.
Right. What about the girl, sir?
We'll get nothing out of her. I don't believe she really knows what that humming noise is. Better have a psychiatrist examine her.
Yes, sir.
Took her to the city hospital, and she had a room to herself. Whenever the door opened, she could see the policeman outside. The door opened quite often. There were a lot of important people, some in army uniforms, who came up from Washington just to see her and talk to her. Apparently, they had analyzed the flying saucer and discovered something that made this girl about the most important person in the country. I used to stand outside, and I could identify the heads of certain security agencies, but nobody would answer the questions that the reporters shot at them.
Sir, excuse me?
Yes?
I'm Jason Benayades from the Trib. I've been assigned to this flying saucer story as chief of the security...
I'm sorry, I have no comment.
Can you tell me how long the girl will be held?
That's a matter for the civil authorities.
We'll have the psychiatrist...
Excuse me, Mr. Benayades. My car's waiting.
A few days later, she was released from the hospital and returned to the court to be tried on the disorderly conduct charge. They found her guilty and fined her $15 and turned her loose. When she walked out of the courtroom, she was handed a subpoena to appear before a congressional committee in private session. She answered all their questions except one. My paper sent me over to cover the hearings.
Now, young lady, I want to remind you that I'm a senator of the United States and empowered by the people of this country to ask questions relating to matters of security. You understand?
Yes.
Your name is Janet Boyce, is it not?
I told you that.
Now, at an earlier session, you testified that as a young girl, you were a member of a certain organization in your neighborhood. Would you name it?
The Rinky Dinks.
Who comprised the Rinky Dinks, Miss Boyce?
It was just a bunch of girls who got together to play field hockey and listen to recordings.
Any particular recordings?
Mostly Eddie Fisher.
I see. Now, this flying saucer, you said it talked to you. You did say that, didn't you?
Yes.
And then you denied it?
Yes.
Why?
Because I was tired of answering questions.
Young woman, let me put something to you squarely. Oh, by the way, I think that there are members of the press here. I can divulge a rather spectacular piece of information to you. Mm. This flying saucer has been thoroughly examined and analyzed, and I wish to inform the people of this great nation that it definitely, I repeat, it definitely did not originate on this planet. Now then, Miss Boyce, consider that it is possible that our Earth might be attacked from outer space by beings much stronger and cleverer than we are. And consider that perhaps you have the key to our defense against those beings. Don't you owe it to the world?
I don't think I owe anything to anybody.
Even if the Earth was not attacked, just think what an advantage it would give this country over its enemies. Young woman, I ask you, what did that flying saucer say to you? Do you know that what you're doing is tantamount to working for the enemies of your country? I will give you one more chance. What was the message?
It was personal.
Gentlemen, I move that Miss Janet Boyce be cited for contempt.
The furor was fantastic. The chief of security blasted the senator for divulging secret information about the origin of the flying saucer, and the senator said the people had a right to know, and besides, he was just guessing anyway, and happened to guess right. Meanwhile, the press printed the girl's picture all over the front page and ran banner headlines such as, "Girl refuses to betray Martian secrets. Flying saucer girl won't talk, cited for contempt." The contempt trial was equally spectacular. She didn't plead any amendment or anything. She just said the saucer was talking to her, and it was nobody else's business. She was convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Benayades. Yes, Chief. For the Sunday supplement? What, do you think there's anything in it? Okay, whatever you say. Mike, get me everything you can on that flying saucer girl, will you? Yeah, the one that was sent to jail about 4 years ago. See if you can find out what she's doing now. She was released about 6 months ago, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah, the boss wants a feature for the Sunday supplement. Okay. I found out she had gotten a job cleaning at night in offices and stores down near the beachfront. There weren't many to clean, but that meant there weren't many people to remember her face from the newspapers. I tracked her down and caught up with her in a one-armed coffee joint about 4 a.m. Excuse me, miss. Do you mind if I sit here?
No.
Nice night, isn't it? Moonlight and everything.
Which are you? Security, newspapers, or just somebody out for a good time?
You're pretty bitter, aren't you?
Shouldn't I be?
Yeah, I guess you should. My name is Jason Benayades. I'm with the newspaper.
It's been nice meeting you. I have to go now.
Just a minute.
Please.
I can't blame you.
How did you find me?
One of the leg men located your mother. I talked to her earlier tonight.
Oh. How is she?
Still hitting the bottle. The way she knew where you were, you sent her some flowers on her birthday, remember?
Yes. She wouldn't talk to me. Said she didn't want a daughter who was a jailbird.
Tell me how it's been.
So you can write about it?
I promise you I won't write anything you don't want me to write.
Okay. You want to know how it's been? Right after I got out of jail, I met a man at a restaurant. Nice man. He asked me for a date. I spent every cent I had on a red handbag to go with my red shoes. They weren't the same shade, but anyway, they were both red. And I was very excited about the date. We went to a movie. Afterward, he didn't even try to kiss me or anything. He just wanted to know what the flying saucer had told me. Didn't say anything. I just went home and cried all night.
And that was it?
No. I had another date. I get pretty lonely. This time they arrested the man I was with. He was a Russian agent. On Christmas Eve, 4 men called me up and sang me a song. Would you like to hear the words?
No, it doesn't matter.
They go, "The flying saucer came down one day and taught her a brand new way to play. And what it was, she will not say. But she takes me out of this world."
I'm sorry.
Now will you go away and leave me alone?
Yes.
Aren't you going to ask me the big question?
No.
Everybody does.
No, well, not me.
You will, sooner or later.
Maybe. Look, can I take you home?
No.
Can I see you again? Please.
I don't know. I'm afraid to let myself like anyone.
Trust me, will you?
I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'll wait here for you tomorrow night.
All right.
The next night, I went back to the coffee joint to wait for her. I knew she got through about 4 a.m. I got there about 15 minutes early.
Mr. Benitez?
Yes. Say, you're the chief of the security section, aren't you?
You have a good memory. You mind if I sit down?
Well, I'm expecting someone.
Yes, I know.
Oh, I see.
I'd like to talk to you.
Go ahead.
You probably know that we've been trying to gain the confidence of this girl for some years now.
Yes.
And apparently you've succeeded where we've failed.
Well, not really.
In any event, you seem to be making some progress.
She may not even show up.
I think she will. Now, I'm going to ask you to help us.
Help? In what way can I help?
We have reason to believe that this girl is a courier for some alien power.
On what do you base that?
Well, there was the incident of the saucer, of course. We've definitely established that it came from some other planet. And recently, she's been throwing messages inside bottles into the ocean.
What sort of messages?
They're always the same. I have one right here. You're welcome to read it and see if it makes any sense. We've had every decoding expert in the service trying to break it, but we can't seem to find the key.
I see.
Now, she's thrown literally hundreds of these messages in bottles into the sea. We've got many of them, but not all, naturally. Now, what we're most interested in is locating the contact.
Naturally.
And that's where you fit in. We'd like you to gain this girl's confidence even further. Try to find out just what these messages mean, and beyond that, what the saucer said to her. You'll be doing us a favor and your country a great service.
You're certain this is some subversive activity on her part.
How else can you explain the fact that she won't tell us her secret?
Maybe because it's hers, and everybody has a right to have something of his own.
Are you, trying to tell me that you won't cooperate?
I didn't say that.
I'd like to remind you, Mr. Benitez, that you have a duty to us.
I know that. I also have a duty to myself and to God. If you'll excuse me.
I folded the bottle message and put it in my pocket. I waited for her to show up. The minutes went by, and the hours, and I knew she wasn't coming. Oh, she had come and seen me with the chief and changed her mind. That's when I left the cafe and walked down to the beach. That's when I dragged her out of the surf before she could follow one of her bottles into the water. How do you feel now? Are you cold?
Why should you care?
I do.
Is that why you were sitting with the security chief in the cafe?
I didn't arrange that meeting. He asked me to spy on you.
I suppose he told you about the bottles.
Yes.
Wonder how much of the taxpayers' money they spent gathering them up. I think they'd get tired of it. All the writing in the bottles is the same.
Maybe you could have saved a lot of trouble.
Do you think so? All of them. Judges, jailers, jukeboxes, people. Do you really think it would have saved me a minute's trouble if I told them the whole truth at the very beginning?
Wouldn't it?
No. They wouldn't have believed me. What they wanted was a new weapon. Some super scientific, super science from some alien super race. Science. That's all they think of.
Well, it's pretty important.
Would it ever have occurred to them that this super race from another planet might have super feelings? Or super longings? Super loneliness? No. All they think about is weapons. Isn't it time you asked me what the saucer said?
No.
They all asked me.
I don't have to ask you. I know.
You know?
Let me read it to you. There is in certain living souls a quality of loneliness unspeakable. So great it must be shared as company is shared by lesser beings. Such a loneliness is mine. So know by this that in immensity there is one lonelier than you.
How did you know?
It's the message you put in the bottles. The same message that some lonely, strange being in some other world put into a bottle, only his bottle was a flying saucer and sent across space to you.
You knew.
I'm lonely too. Look at me. I've never had the love of a woman. They think I'm pretty ugly.
You're not ugly.
No. I don't feel ugly right now.
Say it again. The message from the saucer.
Know by this that in immensity there is one lonelier than you.
I wonder if whoever first wrote it has found someone.
I think perhaps he has. She looked at me and said nothing. But it was as if a light came from her. More light than even the practiced moon could cast. Among the many things it meant was the fact that even to loneliness there is an end for those who are lonely enough, long enough.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features I Am a Nucleus by Stephen Barr, the story of a man who felt he was hexed because his comfortably untidy world had suddenly turned into a monstrosity of order. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Saucer of Loneliness, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Theodore Sturgeon and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Elaine Rost as Janet, Nat Polan as Jason, William Keane as the sergeant, Jock McGregor as the cop, Mandel Kramer as the chief, and Wendell Holmes as the senator. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production.
I love the beach. I like to get there really early, before everybody else shows up. Take like 30 bottles with notes in them. Throw them into the water. Then I wait for everyone to come to the beach. When someone goes to pick up one of the bottles, I go up behind them. Because when they open it, inside there's a note that says, I'm standing right behind you.
Just for Laughs presents comedian Dimitri Martin, live in Vancouver. Don't miss Dimitri Martin Saturday, September 9th at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts. Tickets are on sale now at the theater box office and online at tickets.ubc.ca.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. And that is all the time that we have this evening for Skald's Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. And so from all of us here at CITR,